Good morning. Today, I want us to quickly go through some of the laws of kashering vessels and preparation for Pesach. So, we have a few rules when it comes to vessels. Our first rule is tam ki kal. Flavor equals the thing itself. So, a person's invited to a restaurant, and he sees that the restaurant doesn't have kosher certification. He doesn't know if the food is kosher or not. So they bring out meat and rice. And so he says, I'll just eat the rice. I won't eat the meat. That doesn't work. Because if the meat was cooked with the rice, then the flavor went from the meat to the rice. The person says, but I'm only eating rice. That doesn't help. You go to an event and it's kosher. And you don't want to become fleishix. You want to have a cup of coffee with milk in a minute. So you're not going to eat anything with the meat. You're only going to eat the French fries. Sometimes they take the same oil with which they fried the meat and they fry the French fries with it. I was once at an event where they told, the waiter said, this is parvin, this is parvin, this is parvin. You know, they give out all those burekas, all those different, the mashed potato coated with dough, which they fry. So I asked the waiter, I said, do you know in which oil they fried this? He said, sure, the same oil as they fried that. And he pointed to the meat kebab that was coated with dough. So our rule is tam ki kal d'oraita, that from our end, when you have the flavor, it's as though you have the food itself. And so you can't tell me if I fry them together that this is meat and that's not meat. It's just like you're drinking chicken soup. You're not eating the chicken. You still wait your 6 hours. You don't say, I didn't eat any chicken. I just drank the soup. Right? Tam ki kal, from our end, the flavor equals the thing itself. That's intro number one. Intro number two. Vessels absorb flavor. I never understood this. Until a number of years ago, I was preparing a pot to kasher dishes for Pesach. So I took our fleishik pot, our meat pot, and I cleaned it out real well. And then I filled it with water and I brought it to a boil. And I start seeing pieces of fat floating around the pot. I said, that's very funny. I thought I cleaned it really well. Where'd that fat come from? So what I realized, and I tried this a second time, and again I saw that, I realized that this is the flavor Chazal we're talking about. I was so shocked that I said, I'm doing an experiment. And so I took another pot that we also use for meat.
A metal pot.
Metal pot.
An iron pot.
I cleaned it really well. I brought it to my wife and I said, I want you to inspect this. Am I missing something? Is there any residue? Is there anything here that could come off in the water? And she couldn't find anything. And then I brought it to a boil again. And again, I found fats in the waters. I said, wow, this is what Chazal spoke about. I always read it and wondered, do flavors really come oozing out of the walls of a pot into the water? Chazal say so. I take their word for it. But I never thought I saw that. So then I saw it. So Chazal tell us something that we, in our day and age, we're not so accustomed to this concept. But Chazal tell us the walls of a vessel absorb flavor. If you cook in a pot, the pot absorbs the flavor. And Chazal tell us that for the first 24 hours that flavor is in the pot, it has a good taste. Afterwards, it is noten tam lifgam. It gives out a flavor which is tainted. It doesn't make your food taste any better. On the contrary, it will hurt the flavor of your food. The flavor of food in the walls of a vessel are a good flavor for the first 24 hours, and after the first 24 hours, it is noten tam lifgam. It gives off how would you say pgam?
It's less good. It's like
right, there should be a good word for that. It's not pungent. defective flavor, right? A defective flavor. Right, a defective flavor. So far we're all together?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Technically, if I take a meat pot that's an eino ben yomo, it hasn't been used in the last day, in the last 24 hours, that's called eino ben yomo, and I cook water in it, so that water doesn't have a positive meat flavor, it has a defective meat flavor, noten tam lifgam. So technically, I should be allowed to cook my milk if I want to make myself noodles cooked in milk. They say that's very delicious. Never done that, but they say it's a very delicious thing to cook your noodles in milk instead of water. So let's say I were to cook my noodles in milk in a meat pot. Well, if it's an eino ben yomo, if it hasn't been used in the last 24 hours, then even though we say tam ki kar doraita, even though we say the flavor equals the real thing, but here I'm not getting the real flavor. I'm getting a defective flavor.
Yeah.
So the rabbi said you can't do that. If people would start doing that, then people would end up messing up all their pots. People would end up using their meat pot within 24 hours, their milk pot within 24 hours. You'd end up having a balagan in the kitchen and non-kosher things going back and forth. So Chazal said, our sages said, a person has to have a set of meat dishes and a set of milk dishes. Okay, now comes Pesach. Our sages said, you need Pesach dishes or else you need to remove flavor from your dishes so that you could use them on Pesach. How do we remove flavor from dishes? So our sages told us a rule. Kibboleo kach poleto. The same way the flavor goes in, the flavor goes out. So that means that, let's start with a simple example. You have a kli rishon, you have a pot that you use on the fire. So in order to remove the flavor of that pot, you would technically need to boil water in that pot a second time to remove the flavor from the walls into the water. Now, you'll ask me, but doesn't the flavor get back absorbed into the walls again? So the answer is two things. Number one, usually you have so much water in the pot that the flavor dissipates in the pot. And number two, if the pot absorbed the flavor as a defective flavor, which after 24 hours it does, after 24 hours the flavor going into the water is defective, and now that defective flavor, part of it will go back into the walls. Well, that's okay. My only problem is because the flavor went in as a positive flavor. But if initially the flavor wasn't a good meat flavor, or wasn't a good tasting flavor, it was a defective flavor, so then I don't mind using a meat pot that has defective meat in it. That's why if, let's say you had a cockroach fall into your boiling water, you could take out the cockroach and keep using the water because it didn't give any positive flavor to the water. No one likes cockroach water as far as I know. Our assumption is it gave off a defective flavor to the water. Ah, but it gave off a flavor of cockroach. Right, but it's a defective flavor. So noten tam lifgam, when something is initially gives a defective flavor, then I'm not so interested in tam ki ikar. Coming back to our pot. So I have a pot, I want to kasher it. The first thing I do is I wait 24 hours so that the flavor coming out of the walls of the pot will be defective. So then if I have a pot that I used for noodles 24 hours before Pesach, I run into a problem. How do I kasher that pot? So the first thing I do is I wait 24 hours without using the pot. The second thing I do is I make sure it's very clean because I'm coming to take out the flavor from the walls of the pot. I can only do that when the pot is completely clean, and so then it's cooking as usual. The third issue I have is that sometimes pots boil over. So I can't make it boil over well and make sure that everything, all the rim got boiling water on it. That's very hard. In ancient times, they would sometimes create a temporary lip to the vessel. They would go halfway up the vessel, and then they'd create another lip to extend the vessel upward, and then you could fill the vessel over the rim and boil it, and that was nice. We can't do that. That, I think, in the Gemara is called the Gedanfa. We can't do it. So what do? We put the pot in a bigger pot. That way the pot is completely immersed, and you kasher it. So that's in terms of a kli rishon, and that's what's called hag'ala. So all of your dishes are usually up to the point of hagalah. They don't need more than that. Your fork, sometimes you stick into a boiling pot of water. So your fork also needs that. So we said, the same method that's used for absorbing the flavor is the method that's the level of heat I need to remove the flavor. What about a kli sheni? What happens if I have a soup bowl? So I always use the soup bowl. How do I get soup into my soup bowl? I take a ladle, I take out the soup, I put it in the soup bowl. Now my soup bowl is at least a kli sheni, because it's never on the fire, it never gets to that level of heat. So then I kasher it with a kli sheni. Our assumption is that metal vessels, stone vessels, they can all be kashered. Earthenware vessels, so they can only be kashered with the use of a fire. And being that earthenware very often cracks when you put it in the fire, in an oven, and stuff like that. So our sages said, we don't want you kashering earthenware on a general basis, because you might not do it right, because you'll be concerned it'll crack. So earthenware can only be kashered if you put it in a cauldron. If you put it in the same heat, the same type of oven in which you make earthenware, that oven which you create earthenware dishes in, so that's an oven which gets very hot very fast, and you know that once you put it in, you're not saving it. Either it'll crack or it won't, and probably it won't. So then Chazal said you could kasher an earthenware vessel. But ordinary kashering of earthenware, the assumption is people will not leave it in the heat long enough. They'll be concerned it'll crack. And so then, therefore, the rabbi said, you cannot kasher earthenware. So, starting again, we said, kiboleo kach polito. The same method that's used for absorbing the flavor is the method that's used to remove the flavor. If I ordinarily cook with it on a fire, kli rishon, so I remove the flavor on a fire, kli rishon. If I ordinarily do not use kli rishon, I use kli sheni, I use a secondary vessel, so then it needs to be kashered in that manner with that level of heat. What about things that are used in the fire itself? So here we have a concept called libun. If I have a barbecue grate, so you'll say my hot dogs are kosher for Passover, and I'll say you sometimes heat up the buns on it. What happens if I have my oven? So my oven is dry heat, right? Your oven is dry heat, your toaster oven. How do you kosher that? So practically, it's almost impossible to kosher it. But when we want to kosher things like a barbecue or a barbecue grill, so here again, we have the concept, kibole o kach polito. Same level of heat that's used to absorb is the level of heat that's used to remove the flavor. The only thing is that what we're about to do now is slightly different. We're not removing the flavor the way we do by cooking. That's called hagalah. And in hagalah, what you're doing is you're pulling out the flavor from the walls of the pot into the water. That's hagalah. What you're doing with libun, when you're heating up the vessel, you're burning the flavor in its walls. Libun is different than hagalah. By hagalah, we said, don't do it within 24 hours, because it's coming out into the water and it might go back into the vessel. You wait 24 hours before you do it. By libun, you don't have to wait those 24 hours, because in libun, you're burning the flavor in the walls. You're just burning that flavor. It doesn't matter what state that flavor's in. So how do we do libun? So we have two forms of libun. Our general assumption is that libun requires what we call libun chamur, the classical stringent libun, which is at a point that their vessels, we don't have this level, this type of vessel anymore, but if you buy very cheap tin pots, then you can see that when the pot reaches a certain heat, it starts giving little sparks, it starts glowing. So Chazal said libun is bringing something to heat where it would give off sparks. Our pots don't give off sparks. We have different forms of metal. But it's the type of heat that's the equivalent of putting a coal on it. Meaning when the halacha discusses kashering the oven in which you made matzah, let's say one of your matzahs became chametz. So now the floor of your oven just absorbed chametz. You realize that your matzah sat there, it wasn't getting baked, and after 18 minutes you say, that matzah's been sitting in the oven for a long time, my oven must not be hot enough, that matzah for sure became chametz. So what do you do now? So the halacha says, you take coals, and you cover the floor of the oven with coals. You move the coals around the floor. With that, you did libun to the floor of the oven. And then you move away the coals and you continue using the oven. So here we see the concept that putting coals on something equals libun, right?
Yep.
So the same thing is true. If you're going to go camping and you find a public grate, so now you want to use it, you have to take the burning hot coals and put them all over the barbecue. That's harder than it sounds, because the barbecue is not only the grates. It's the grates, it's the rim, it's the lid. It's a little bit hard. Meaning sometimes that's the only thing you got, that's what you're going to do, fine. So that's what we call libun chamur. So where do we use this?
How long do you have to leave it on the grate?
A little bit, just so it gets hot. I'm saying you're moving the coals a little bit at a time, but it doesn't take that long to heat up the metal. You're not leaving it there for 5 minutes. You're leaving it there for a couple of seconds and moving on. You're moving it along the grate, remember? You don't have enough coals. I'm saying at a matzah factory, so they have these huge logs, they have these huge coals, they can move them around the floor. You're working with smaller coals. And the thing you got to remember is safety. Don't burn yourself. Don't do it when kids are around, that they can get burnt. Sometimes, as we're dealing with these things, we forget how hot they are. So, libun. So that's our libun chamur. Then we have a lighter form of libun, which is discussed in halacha. That's called libun kal. That's in Gemara, in Shulchan Aruch terminology, you bring something to heat that if you put a piece of straw on it, it would burn. So in our terminology, that would be so that if you put baking paper on the other side, it turns brown. Okay, so that's the equivalent. So that's a lighter form of libun, but that's still better than hagalah. Remember we said there are gradations. There's kli sheni, and then you go up to kli rishon, the vessel which was cooked on the fire, and then you go up to libun. Libun kal, and then libun chamur. So libun kal is still more than hagalah. So where does this come up? Sometimes a soldier comes to a pillbox, and he has guard duty, and the soldiers that are leaving tell him, you should know the group before you didn't eat kosher. Now, didn't eat kosher could mean that they brought pork up there. Unfortunately, even though it's against the law, soldiers are not allowed to cook non-kosher food on base or in the army's vessels, and if they're caught, they can be put in jail over it. They would be put in jail over it. But practically, when a soldier's in a pillbox, he can see about 15 minutes in advance before anyone approaches his pillbox. No one can surprise him. That's the whole point. He's in a guard tower where he can see everything. So he knows full well when his superiors are coming, and that means that soldiers will sometimes feel very comfortable doing what they want up there. So let's say you come to a place where in these guard towers, very often today, the guards have to prepare their own food. They leave you a pot, and sometimes they bring you rice, and sometimes they bring you other stuff. You got to cook your own food. So you have a little fire there, and you're supposed to prepare your food. What do you do now? The pots you have, you were just told, are not kosher. So you clean them out well, and then you do libun. You put them on the fire, you put a piece of paper on top, and you wait until it all gets hot to the point where the paper on top turns brown, and now you know you just did libun, you just koshered that pot. So that's the idea of libun kal, the lighter form of libun. There are areas where this is relevant, where this makes it easier for us in halacha, where we could use that. Because remember, that's one step higher than hagalah. You don't have a big pot to put your little pot in. You have one pot you're supposed to cook your rice and all your meals in. So what are you going to do? So that's a good way of doing libun. So far what we've learned is that we have kli rishon, kli sheni, libun kal, libun chamur. Now let's start dealing with the practical. Our custom is that generally we have special vessels for Pesach. Most of our vessels we don't kasher for Pesach. We try to have a separate set of dishes, cutlery. We try to have a separate set of cookingware. We try to have a separate oven. We try to have a separate mixer. A mixer is almost impossible to clean. Your mixer is going to have flour in it. Go get all the flour out of the little crevices that are made for air to come in and out of the motor. Wherever you deal with real food, so you can't have crumbs of chametz or flour floating around. Your food has to be kosher for Passover. So a mixer is something which it's very hard to the point of being almost impossible to get it really clean. A mixer, a blender, all these things that have airways, and you deal with flour, so that's very hard. What about a peeler? Technically, if you clean the peeler, you could use a peeler for Pesach. I don't think people use a peeler with anything chametz. What about a can opener? Technically, if you cleaned it well, you could. Practically, we don't do that. We have a full separate set of dishes for Pesach. What about our silverware? So our custom is that we kosher silverware. Even though most of the time your silverware is just holding a cup of wine, a cup of grape juice, and that's generally kosher for Passover. But sometimes people leave it overnight. Sometimes there are crumbs inside. So that's a stringency. That's our custom that we do kosher our silverware or our silver becher. Our silver becher for Pesach or we have a separate one for Pesach. What about the dishes, the silverware, the cutlery? The goblet. The goblet used for Kiddush. So generally we kosher them for Pesach. We assume that sometimes you forgot them with a little bit of grape juice or wine and crumbs inside. And we have a concept of kavush kimvushal, that if something remains 24 hours, it gets pickled there, so it gives off flavor. So we do it. It's a stringency. What about our cutlery, our silverware, forks, knives, and spoons? So the custom is we have a separate set for Pesach. Technically, you could kosher them. Technically, you could put them in a vat of boiling water, and you're okay. The problem arises, A, can you cleanse them well enough? Very often, they have designs where things get stuck. And if you have serrated edges on your knives, if you look closely in between the teeth of your fork, is there really nothing there? So you could clean them and check each one really well. And if you have dishes that don't have designs, that stuff gets caught in them, so you could do Haggadah. Practically, it's hard, and very often people will miss things. So that's why we practically have a separate set of dishes for Pesach, which means meat and milk. And usually the way it works is couples develop their Pesach dishes over years. Meaning the first year you're married, what do you need? You need a set of forks and knives and spoons for you and your wife. You need very little. You're a small family. As you grow, you start expanding. What about the oven? So there are many opinions that say that you cannot kosher an oven. Our ovens are lined with enamel. In Hebrew, that's called emayel. So enamel, we don't know if enamel is treated as earthenware, the way it absorbs. It's not clear that you could really kosher an oven. There are opinions that permit koshering an oven. They say bring the oven to its highest heat, being that the walls of the oven technically, they're only absorbing from steam. So they say what you can do is libun kal. You bring the oven to its highest heat. The walls are definitely hot enough that baking paper would turn brown. And that's enough for koshering the walls of the oven. What about the oven trays? Well, libun kal does not work for the oven trays, because the oven trays, you put bread on them, you put toast on them, you do put chametz directly on them, so they're not absorbing from the steam in the oven like the walls of the oven. They're absorbing from chametz directly on them. And that's why one should really have separate oven trays for Pesach. If you can't afford that, you have a year where you're stuck, so you can double line your oven trays with silver foil. And then your food won't come in direct contact with those oven trays. But ideally, we get a separate oven for Pesach, because there are definitely opinions like Rav Moshe Feinstein that say you cannot kosher an oven for Pesach, period. What about a microwave? So you clean out the microwave well. You don't use it for 24 hours with chametz. And then there are opinions that say that you may boil a cup of water in the microwave, and being that the walls of the microwave absorb from steam, so that you boil a cup of water in there with steam, and that koshers it. Now, you have to find out, there's practical advice about how to do this. Look it up online. You don't want to get burnt. There are ways of doing it that when you open the microwave, all the boiled water splashes on you. I don't know the rules. I don't have a microwave. The rules of how to do this, boil a cup of water in a microwave. the plate, the base that you put your food on in the microwave, right? The revolving plate. So that, again, you run into the problem of how do you kasher that? So that plate can handle high heat. Ideally, you should boil water and kasher that plate in boiling water. Meaning that plate, just like we said, your oven trays cannot be kashered by just turning your oven to the highest heat. By the same token, the plate of the microwave where food is placed on and sometimes food drips on, that has to be kashered in boiling water. So you would have to boil water and put it in, or else get a new plate for Pesach. So far we covered an oven, we covered dishes, we covered cutlery, we covered microwave. I want us to move forward to countertops and tables, but Benny has a question.
If we say with the barbecue that the rails, you could put bread directly on and you could kosher it with libun chamor, why can't we say the same thing with oven trays?
You could, but oven trays will get destroyed with libun chamor. It's not practical. Technically, you're right. I could do libun chamor. I could put a blowtorch to the oven. Everyone agrees that a blowtorch would kasher an oven, and that's fine. Everyone agrees that a blowtorch equals libun chamor. That would kasher the oven, and that would kasher the trays. Practically, our ovens can't handle that. The enamel coating would get destroyed. As far as self-cleaning ovens, so it's generally accepted that self-cleaning ovens reach the heat of libun chamur, and that is generally accepted that that's good enough. You might want to do a little bit of research because self-cleaning ovens evolve, and there are questions about the door of the oven and the rubber coatings of the oven. But again, what was generally known was that self-cleaning ovens reach that heat, that level of heat. In Hebrew, it's called piroliti ovens. In the United States, called self-cleaning ovens. They reach that heat, and you could also, when you bring it to that heat, you could leave inside. The trays are built for that heat, and you could leave inside whatever dishes you want to bring to that heat. Just bear in mind that some things will melt and get destroyed and destroy your oven. So you have to make sure you know what you're doing and only leave stuff inside that won't get destroyed or destroy your oven when the oven reaches that heat. Yes?
First of all, most self-cleaning ovens in America are capital racks.
Okay.
Second thing is, the new form of self-cleaning oven, at least in America, it doesn't go to iron.
Which?
The new type of self-cleaning oven, which is very popular in America, is lower energy. It doesn't actually get to iron.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a new thing about 8 months ago.
So I don't know about the new self-cleaning ovens. Do your homework with your local Orthodox rabbi. He's saying there's a new thing out there. I don't know. I mean, the self-cleaning ovens I know, you could leave the racks in and they were fine. Not anymore. Okay, so practically you have to do your own homework. We move forward. Countertops. So do we have Sfardim here today? We have Sfardim. So there's a big difference between Sfardim and Ashkenazim. On Pesach, we know that, right? So Ashkenazim have a stringency that even something which we don't do frequently, we are concerned about. Meaning, let's take our countertops. You usually don't put boiling stuff on the countertop. Most of your use with the countertop is with cool stuff. Let's take your cutlery. Your forks, knives, and spoons. Most of what you do with your forks, knives, and spoons is not in a Kli Rishon. Every so often, you might take a fork and put it in the soup to check if your potato is soft enough, if your chicken cooked enough. But most of your usage of a fork is not that way. Do I have to be concerned for a usage that is rare? Ashkenazim hold you do. Sfardim find out what your rabbi says. But Ashkenazim, the Rama says, we are concerned on Pesach, even with uses that are rare. So let's take our countertops. We sometimes put hot toast, baked bread, a slice of pizza straight out of the oven on the countertop. So then our countertop is coming in contact with direct heat of food. So that's why, ideally, we should kosher our countertops. Clean them off and pour boiling water on them. That doesn't work for most countertops. Many countertops will crack and get ruined if you do that. So we do something else. And the same is true for your kitchen table and other tables around the house that you put food on. So again, technically you should kasher them. Practically, it might destroy them. So what we do is we line them. We put two layers. The bottom layer is very often plastic, so that way the water that might be there won't make the second layer, which is usually a thick tin foil, won't make it get ruined. If you put paper, the paper will get destroyed. It won't last 2 days. You can get thick tin foil. You can get thick... you have plastic tablecloths you could put there. You're not using the direct countertop, which you used for chametz. We also attach a lining onto our tables for the same reason. So either tables you could cover with paper, you could cover with a thick roll. We have thick plastic tablecloths, which you could attach. But this isn't the tablecloth you'll be using all week long. This is a lining that's covering the table over which you'll put your tablecloth, etc. So the custom is that we cover our tables, we cover our countertops. If you have a countertop which can be kashered, you kasher it. One more point about kashering. Things that you're going to kasher by pouring boiling water on them, so then they have to be dry before you pour the boiling water. The idea is that just as the boiling water that hit them, for example, your sink, you never cook water in your sink, right? Yeah. No one puts their iron in their sink and boils some water. No one puts a heat element in a sink and boils their water. But you do sometimes pour out a pot of noodles in your sink, so you have irui kli rishon pouring from the pot off the fire. You pour out the water and the noodles. You do have boiling hot noodles that sometimes spill into the sink. Yeah. So our sinks do receive irui kli rishon, the pouring from a first vessel of boiling hot water. So technically, depending what your sink is made out of, you would have to kasher it. Some sinks are made of porcelain. They're made of different materials that are not kasherable. Then we line the sink. Sometimes we get sink inserts. Even then, we cleanse the sink really well using a caustic cleanser. And we pour boiling water on them because it does have some effect. After that, we put an insert. If you have a stainless steel sink, so then you could kasher it. But you have to bear in mind that whenever you're pouring boiling water on something, you have to dry it well first. Before you pour the boiling water along it, it has to be dry. If it has cold water on it, then the cold water cools off the boiling water. You want the boiling water to go straight. And then you just go along in zigzags until you've covered all the surface got hit by the boiling water pouring out of the pot. Yes, sir. Now, again, just make sure you don't have kids around. You have towels prepared to absorb all the boiling water. You got to make sure no one gets burnt doing this, right? Yes, sir. Not sure. So then you're fine. Single coat is fine. Hot water urns. So for Shabbat, we very often have hot water urns. Can we use the same urn for Shabbat and Pesach? Because you never cook anything but water in that urn. So technically it should be okay. But people do heat up ragalach on that urn. People do put their challahs to heat on that. Meaning at the end of the day, it does come in contact with chametz. People do sometimes pour out boiling water. Let's say on Matzei Shabbos, you want to make yourself oatmeal. So you pour the water directly from the pot onto the oatmeal, and sometimes it splashes back onto the urn. So hot water urns, we assume, are coming in contact with chametz. And so that's why we have separate ones for Pesach. It's very hard practically to kasher them. They're not built in a way that you can do it practically. Almost always it'll get ruined if you try to do it. So we figure out something else for Pesach. Sometimes you have just a pot of boiling water for Pesach. Again, you got to make sure, if you're improvising, to do it in a way that's safe, that no kid can pull it down. Okay, so today we covered the idea of Tam ki kar. Flavor equals the thing itself. We covered the idea of kibbole okach polto, the way something absorbs is the way you can remove the flavor. We covered the idea of notin tam lifgam, that after 24 hours, the flavor that comes out of the walls of the vessels is defective. We covered the idea of libun kal and libun chamur. The more stringent libun, burning of a vessel, is when I bring it to heat that it would give off sparks. Today our vessels don't give sparks, but we know approximately the heat we have to reach. We covered libun kal, which would mean that if you just touch it with a straw, the straw burns, or today baking paper would turn brown on it. We said that libun kal is one step higher than kli rishon, than cooking a pot on the fire. And then we have another step down, pouring from a kli rishon, irui kli rishon, and then another step down, kli sheni. So we covered the idea that we cover our countertops, we cover our tables, and we discussed the idea that when you do irui, when you're pouring, it should be on a dry surface. We also discussed the idea that our kli rishon often overflows, and that's why we will generally kasher it within another vessel, because it's hard to get the rim and over the rim the way you would when it cooks. That's why when we kasher it, we put it in another vessel. And we also discussed that whenever we kasher something, we make sure it's clean and hasn't been used in the last 24 hours, unless what we're doing is libun, where we're burning the flavor inside the walls of the vessel.